On today's episode of the Real Foodology Podcast.
Corporations want to make money and they don't care about your health. They're not incentivized to. Why would they? And so I think like the more you can just get involved in the food system by meeting with local farmers and buying your food from where you live, that's how this gets better for you.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. I am your host, Courtney Swan, and you are listening to the Real Foodology Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Anthony Gustin. We actually met a couple weeks ago because we were both in Fredericksburg for this regenerative farming conference. If you guys follow me on Instagram, you know that I went down there to just learn more about regenerative farming. It was with Force of Nature. If you guys are unaware of them and their meats, I would highly recommend checking them out. They have amazing grass-fed, pasture-raised, organic meats that come from their regenerative ranch. It's called Rome Ranch, and it's outside of Austin, Texas. I met Anthony while I was down there through a mutual friend, and I learned so much from him in the short amount of time that we chatted that I told him that I just needed to bring him on the podcast. This is one of those episodes where I learn so much. I always learn from my guests, and I'm always so blown away by everything that I learn in these podcasts. But this one in particular, there's a lot of stuff that Anthony talks about that I have not even thought about in this food space yet. And I love what he's doing right now in the food space. I try to keep these intros pretty short, so you will learn more about what he's doing in the episode. And more importantly, we didn't really get to go over this, but I want to point this out. So Anthony is involved in a company called Zero Acre, and they are working on trying to provide healthier alternatives to seed oils. So definitely check them out. I'm going to leave a link in the show notes for that. And most importantly, in this episode, we dive really deep into seed oils, canola oil, rapeseed, sunflower oil, etc. We are seeing these more than ever pop up in our food, and we really dive into why these are unhealthy for us and why we want to avoid them. We also talk about the feed that we give to our chickens and pigs. So even when they say corn and soy free, they're actually still getting vegetable oils, which is really not great for them. And we dive more into that. So let's just get into the episode, shall we? As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you could leave a rating and review, it would help me so much. And I just really appreciate your support. Have you ever tried CBD and felt like, okay, this is not really working? And there's so much hype around CBD and you feel like, okay, why is this working for everyone else, but for some reason it's not working for me? Well, the thing about CBD products is that they are not all created equal. Unfortunately, when something gets really trendy, like in the case of CBD, a lot of companies take advantage of that, and there are a lot of companies that are claiming that their products have way more CBD in them than they actually do. This is why I am obsessed with Cured Nutrition. They are an industry leader when it comes to quality control. All their products are produced in certified GMP facilities and third-party tested, and all of their test results are shared with the public on their website. So you can go to their website and you can actually see how much CBD is in every single one of their products. Personally, I'm a huge fan of CBD because it helps me relax. I deal with a lot of stress and anxiety, and it really helps to calm down my nervous system. And it also really helps me sleep. So my favorite products are Zyn and the Nighttime CBN Oil. And they gave me a little code to share with you guys. If you use code REALFOODOLOGY, you're going to save 20% at checkout at curednutrition.com. That's CuredNutrition. You know, one of my missions with Real Foodology has always been to make eating healthier more convenient and cost-effective. I know eating healthy and getting the right nutrients in can be annoying. It can also be time-consuming and expensive. Organic veggies are pretty expensive sometimes and not always convenient to shop for. So one of the ways that I'm able to support my health is by drinking Organifi every day. I personally like to do their organic green juice and the organic red juice together. I combine them. It's so simple. There's no longer having to shop for vegetables and clean out a juicer every day. You just put a scoop of each in water. I mix them together. I love the taste together. They're organic. They're also glyphosate residue free, so you're not getting the carcinogenic herbicide in there. And it's just super convenient. It also, the reds really make them taste better when you put them together. Also, if you subscribe and save, you can get them as low as $1.98 per day per tub. So make sure you go to Organifi.com/realfoodology and use code realfoodology and you're going to save 20%. That's Organifi.com. So a little background for the listeners. Anthony and I actually met recently at the Force of Nature Regenerative Farming Conference. And I was so excited about some of the conversations that you and I were having that I was like, I need to bring you on the podcast because everything you and I were talking about are things that I talk about a lot on the podcast. So for everyone listening, why don't you give them a little bit of background on you and what you do?
Yeah, that's been a tough thing to answer, I guess. Every couple of years, it changes dramatically. But my training is as a chiropractor. So I have my doctorate in chiropractic and master's in sports rehab, and was doing that for a while, then switched to more functional medicine work. And then from that, just was trying to figure out how to help more people. So launched some businesses that took off. So switched from functional medicine provider to online entrepreneur type person. And then from that, made a shift recently to be a small farmer. So I have no idea what I'm doing, but that's kind of the brief background.
No, but it sounds like you do know what you're doing, and you've done a lot of really cool, amazing stuff. I recently found out that you had started Perfect Keto, and I'm a huge fan of those cookies.
Cookies are great. Bars are great.
Cookies are great. Yeah.
The Nola bars, it's one of like the last the products that I developed. So I was pretty maniacal about the product development. And man, those things are crazy. I mean, they're basically like candy bars, but way healthier. So they're good substitutions, definitely still treats. And I prefer people to eat real food. And I think that's always a caveat where people think I'm some like fake food shill or something. And I mean, I'm the first one to say every single time, like, these are treats. These are not real food products. Like, eat real food. And then if you want to have these on, or, you know, if people are trying to make a shift, then it's great. But just that's worth throwing that caveat out there.
Yeah. And I think this is really important because more than ever, now that health is really getting on the map, we're just seeing this influx of all these processed foods. I mean, I went to the Natural Foods Expo a couple months ago, and every year I go, I'm just so surprised by all of this stuff that's packaged as super healthy, and then you turn it around and it's still like all this processed garbage.
Yeah.
And it's really confusing for people that are trying to eat healthy.
It's very common. I mean, Expo West, which you're talking about, is people who don't know, it's like this enormous warehouse with 10,000 plus exhibitors of all these brands who are showcasing their new products for retail buyers and for the industry. And it, yeah, I've gone, I don't know, 5-6 years, and it is a sad scene typically where it's just the latest trend and people trying to sell things as something that they absolutely are not. And generally people don't need it. It's like trying to find a new way to sell people something is generally what the whole thing and that, and like most health products are that as well. I think that there's some really great, genuine brands that I love to support that are actually trying to solve problems for people and make stuff that doesn't exist in the first place. But then there's just a lot of, I don't know, I think unnecessary stuff going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a ton of seed oils. This is really what gets me. So there's a lot of products that are packaged as being super healthy, and then you turn it around and it has like sunflower oil or canola oil. And I know this is something you feel very passionately about. So what is the deal with seed oils? Like, why are they so unhealthy for us?
Yeah, so seed oil, people who don't know, are oils typically made from seeds. Don't have to be, but generally made from seeds. Corn, canola, cottonseed, soybean, sunflower, safflower, rapeseed, grapeseed, rice bran. These are the oils that you want to avoid. And the reason why is a couple of different reasons, but generally speaking, all fats are made up of fatty acids. So there's like proteins made up of amino acids. They're just the building blocks that make up the fats. And historically, humans have eaten certain fats our entire human history. And now this is changing dramatically with this new fat that we've made. So these are industrial processed fats. So we cannot get these without enormous machinery that costs tens of millions of dollars to press seeds and then refine through this crazy multi-step process with a bunch of chemicals to then get this flavorless, odorless thing that never existed in nature. And the biggest thing is one of these fatty acids, linoleic acid, is very problematic. And so we've eaten historically about 2-3% of our fat comes from linoleic acid. In a lot of these seed oils, like sunflower, which actually ironically sounds the best. And so it's like, oh, sunflower, those are both good things. Sunflowers look pretty. It must be a natural thing. Great. And I mean, the same with the branding of vegetable oil. It's like a very good branding play. That's why I like co-opting it to seed oils because it sounds less healthy. And yeah, it's just, we're eating now 25% of our calories as Americans from vegetable oils, and sunflower, soybean especially, are 80% linoleic acid. So we're getting 40 times the amount in these fats than we've ever consumed in human history.
That's crazy.
Which is not good. I've been talking about this topic for, I don't know, the first podcast I did on it was 4 years ago. I tried to start a company in this space like 7 years ago, but the technology wasn't there. But I actually just released in my podcast, Natural State, a two-part episode with Tucker Goodrich, who I think is one of the best people in the world, one of the best experts in the world that know about this stuff. And we sort of broke down over about 5 hours of the science on why these things are so bad. And so I can give a brief overview here. And if anybody really wants to nerd out, they can go dig into Tucker's work and listen to the podcast that I did with him. But there's a variety of reasons why these fats are not good for us. So when you're looking at saturated fats, the way the chemical compound looks is basically a squiggly line, and they all look the same. And so no matter how long the chain of the fat is, they can all stack on top of each other. And because they can do that, that's why at room temperature, it's a solid fat, because they're all stacked on top of each other. When we're looking at the different types of fats, monounsaturated and polyunsaturated just means multiple unsaturated parts of the molecule. So the chemical compound now starts looking a little twisty and bendy, and those things slip and slide over each other, but more importantly, can oxidize very easily. And so I don't know how much background your audience has on, you know, oxidation and flow of electrons and free radicals and why these are not good things. But generally people here in the health space, like, oh, we want all these antioxidants. And oxidation is just something where it basically takes electrons from your body and starts causing some havoc in your cellular processes. And so think about basically polyunsaturated fatty acids, especially from seed oils, like firecrackers in your body, where like they auto-oxidize, so they oxidize on their own. They don't need any special reaction. And then they start creating this chain reaction and creating all this inflammation in your body via this process of oxidation. This is just one of many, many, many mechanisms. Another thing that I think is really important to highlight is almost all chronic diseases, which is sort of what fascinated me a lot of, just like, why have we had this explosion of chronic disease? And when you start digging into it, every single one has this root of mitochondrial dysfunction. So again, I don't know where your audience is at, but mitochondria are these things in your cells that they create all of the power, all the energy that powers all of your body. And looks like every single chronic disease we're looking at, whether it's diabetes, even obesity, cancer, neurodegenerative disease, heart disease, et cetera, sort of have this shared thing where you have mitochondrial dysfunction. I used to think in sort of my background with ketogenic diet that a lot of that was from overconsumption of simple carbohydrates. Your body was taking in too much, couldn't process it, all these other, you know, very specific things that we don't need to get into the very deep chemistry of it. But turns out that what I'm starting to learn more of now, that these specific fatty acids start replacing a lot of the mechanisms in the mitochondria. And again, Tucker and I go into this in depth in my podcast. It can get very dry and nerdy at times, but if people really want to know, and your body can no longer make the same energy the same way. So the efficiency of your mitochondria and how it makes energy that your body can use for all these critical processes starts down-regulating dramatically.
Wow.
Not good. Another thing is, so you think about your cells like a big beach ball. And the outer layer of that beach ball, it's called a phospholipid bilayer. So lipid is fat. So the outside of all of your cells is made of fat. This is one of the reasons why low-fat diets are not a great idea for, you know, a variety of reasons. They make up your hormones, nervous tissue, cells, et cetera. So you need high-quality fats to have this integrity of this sort of beach ball of your cell. And you have all these receptors and locking key mechanisms and channels on your cells so that the cells can send signals to other cells, communicate, do different things. When you start replacing that phospholipid bilayer with these poor quality fats, it goes from this nice big open beach ball sort of shape to think about like a newspaper crumpled up. So you have all these crevices and you have all these receptors that no longer can be communicating with other cells. And so you start blunting the communication between the cells. again, this is like a very oversimplified version, obviously, but it's, I think it's helpful for people to get a, more of a visual of how this stuff happens. And yeah, so that's another reason, another one that Tucker goes into quite a lot. So in scientific journals, there are, so like when people do research and they say, oh, here's this study, they typically are contained in journals. And so when people release research, they release it in like thematic versions. So it's like, hey, here's this journal with 500 studies about this one topic. There are multiple journal episodes dedicated to the downstream metabolites of linoleic acid. So there's tons of toxic metabolites, and the word toxic gets thrown around quite a lot. And I think people are a little sick of it, but this is like by definition toxic. Like this is killing you. These metabolites, like the mechanisms are very clearly understood. There's 4-HNE, 4-hydroxynonenal, 9-HO, 13-HO, et cetera. There's all these aldehydes that are formed from cooking these specific compounds. Mm. And there's thought to be hundreds, if not thousands, of these literal toxic metabolites that are produced from eating these oils. So again, the list goes on and on and on. I think that's probably enough to start convincing people like, okay, mechanistically, there's a lot there. This new project that I'm working on, it's called Zeric or Farms. We're basically trying to do a lot of what I did in the early days of Perfect Keto, which was create the go-to content database on keto. When we first started putting content out, there was nothing that existed. And so like, okay, well, let's create the sort of like go-to spot if anybody wants to know anything about this. And so we're doing the same thing with seed oils. So we actually just published our first, what we call our white paper. So we got a bunch of the top experts in the world together and basically made what I consider to be better than a research paper. So it's 40 pages long, a little intense for some people, but talking about all of these things, but also how it impacts obesity. So when we look at obesity, heart disease, cancer, neurodegenerative disease, advanced macular degeneration, all of this stuff, it looks like a primary cause could be this species inappropriate levels of these fats that we've never eaten in our entire human history and are now eaten. It's like when you look at the curves of, for example, when we took the data after smoking was out for a while and we put it over incidence of smoking and incidence of lung cancer, it looks very similar when we put together obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and seed oil consumption. And we have that data. Again, like I know that correlation is not causation for sure, but that was one of the first things that we saw with smoking that allowed us to go back and be like, okay, let's understand the mechanisms because something here is going on. And the same thing, what we're finding with seed oils is happening here, where every time a country introduces these into their food system, rates of obesity, heart disease, cancer, diabetes start going through the roof. This is something that I took a trip to see this hunter-gatherer tribe last year in Tanzania called the Hadza tribe. And my friend and I, we've been obsessed with like, what is the root cause of all these chronic diseases? What's going on? I was sort of like getting out of the carbohydrates, the primary thing, because we would see all these people in these villages who were outside of where the tribe lived that were subsisting purely on cornmeal.
Really?
And yeah, only basically ugali, which is what they eat a lot there, which is cornmeal. And they were all very old, very healthy, very fit, beautiful teeth, beautiful body composition. And they were eating a lot of this cornmeal. It wasn't until they started getting into the cities or even like the bigger village where like we saw tubs and tubs and tubs of this rancid, weird, like the most disgusting vegetable oils that I've ever seen in my life. And they cooked everything in it. And then like, it's like you walk across the street basically. So these villages that are only eating ugali. So it's basically like you have larger towns that have a little bit more sort of industrial things, roads, power, et cetera. Then you have these fringe, no power, no infrastructure villages that are like in extreme poverty. And then you have like the hunter-gatherer tribes as kind of like this spectrum of living. And the people, again, that were only eating the ugali or obviously the hunter-gatherers, they both actually had very similar health, which was shocking to us. Like we were expecting that the hunter-gatherers to be like the fittest of the bunch and all this, but the people just subsisting on cornmeal, totally fine. Like not a lot of variety in their nutrients, not a lot of food overall. Like their diets were very poor. Their lifestyle was like completely impoverished. But then when you go to the cities and the only thing we saw change, it's not like they were eating tons of packaged food. They were just cooking all of their food in these like weird brown tubs of vegetable oils, everything. And they were now obese, like very unhealthy looking. Like their skin was not good. You just, you know, you look at somebody, you're like, okay, something like you have a huge inflammatory load, everyone. And there was very little difference between those two tribes. And so again, I'd say like, that is the reason why I think this. That's why we're pulling together all of these crazy reports to talk about the mechanism of all these different conditions. But overall, it to me is pretty unequivocal. Again, I don't think that there's, with biology, it's a complex system. You're not going to have one cause of these things. It's multifactorial. You're going to have primary, secondary causes, things like that. And I think for a lot of health conditions going on right now, seems to me that seed oils are a primary driver.
Okay, this is fascinating because I, like you, got into the keto space. I mean, I've been talking about sugar for like 10 years now as being the real driving force of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, like you name it, all the chronic diseases that we're seeing. But I actually wanted to ask you about this because I've been seeing, and I know you kind of, I think you're kind of in the carnivore camp a little bit. I'll let you speak to that. But I've been seeing this trend in the carnivore camp where they're all telling people to start eating honey and more fruits, and sugar is not the devil that we made it out to be. And is this partially because we're starting to realize that it's actually seed oils and it's not sugar?
The way I think about it is that there's the main things we went awry with in health and nutrition. So like I think of health again as multifactorial. So like there's nutrition, which I think is the biggest thing that leads to health issues. But there's also stress, trauma, community, sleep, movement. Like there's a lot of things that go into the bucket to make up your actual health and vitality.
Environmental and so I think like, toxins too.
Yeah, of course. There's an enormous amount of things, a huge list that you could point to. So let's just acknowledge that nutrition itself is one bucket. And then within nutrition, the way I view it is like there's three main things that are problematic. And then beyond that, you have a ton of nuance for the individual. But it's refined carbohydrates, sugars, refined grains, like a white flour, and refined fats, which are the oils that we're talking about. And when you look at how long they impact people, that, you know, when you consume a sugar, if you're wearing, for example, like a continuous blood glucose monitor, you can see the spike and you can see your blood sugar return back to normal. And so even if it spikes up to 250 and then comes back down to 80 or wherever you're at, like, okay, like maybe I feel this energy crash and it's like a 3-hour thing. If you eat wheat and like refined flour, some people have a response, some people don't, but it can, you know, there's a lot of evidence that shows it can impact blood-brain barrier, gut tight gap junctions, things like that, create gut dysfunction. But those areas typically heal within like a week to 10 days. The thing with the seed oils and why it can be so problematic is because you eat the seed oil and it gets embedded into your tissues, nervous tissues, cells, et cetera, fat tissue for minimum of 2 years, up That's to five nuts. Years. And so if you keep eating this stuff, your body just has no time to get rid of it. And so it's a compounding effect that stays with you no matter what, basically, until you remove it all completely from your diet. And like, I'm trying to develop a test right now where people can do an at-home thing to figure out like where they're at in that spectrum and how they can sort of weave in and out of this. And I tested myself and like, it doesn't look great, which is unfortunate. And like, I'm trying to figure out like, okay, like how do I adjust these levels in myself? And it's been a journey for me. I just find it really interesting. And I think within each of those buckets of, you know, what I think to be problematic or not, really like when you take an organism out of its natural environment, you're going to have issues. And I think like the more you process a food, the worse it's likely going to be for humans. This is a very simple heuristic that I've had a really hard time finding any counterexamples to. And so, for example, I had someone just ask me earlier today, like, what about my friend who puts flax seeds in her smoothie and loves those? Are those as bad? Like, of course, flax seeds in their whole form are not as bad as, for example, you need 4,000 soybeans to get one tablespoon of oil. And you need a ridiculous amount of processing capacity via machines and all that stuff. And they do solvents, this weird thing where they take out the odor. And so when you have, like, when fish goes bad, for example, that's polyunsaturated fatty acids going bad. And you smell that fishy smell is actually just PUFAs going rancid. With the oils, they deodorize them. So that way, when they go rancid, you can't smell anything.
That's crazy. So people are consuming rancid oils and they don't even know it.
Yeah. And so again, like, even if seeds started going rancid, you made some seed meal, like, you can smell when that goes bad. Like, you remove that mechanism, and there's a spectrum from, like, okay, like, I went outside and picked these seeds off of a thing, to, like, I got the seeds in bulk from this industrial farm, to all the way to the other end, I have this jug of rancid flaxseed oil. And so with all this stuff, sugar included, I think that there's an infinite spectrum. And I don't, like, yeah, I've seen some of the carnivore people, like, talking about how you should be literally drinking Coca-Cola, which is, I think, frankly, absurd. And they play this game generally, like, I think with, same with the crypto community, which I support carnivore. I'm not a carnivore type of person myself. I think they have a lot of good things that they're trying to popularize. Same with crypto, which big supporter of. But I think, like, when you start publishing things online that are controversial and you sort of build this thing on shock and awe, and then you start losing the ability
momentum
to get it. Like, you keep looking for things that are, I think, a little ridiculous. And I think that that's what's going on with some of this, like, drink Coca-Cola because it's good for you now. Like, I think that fruit is a complex thing because we've gone so far away from what fruit naturally is. There's a phenomenal book called Eating in the Wild Side, I think is what it is, by Joe Robinson. And she breaks down basically, like, here's every single plant, like, produce and like vegetable and fruit, and here's how far we've gone away from them from our historical foods. And then even talks about, like, here, like, it, with apples, for example, the smaller they are, the more antioxidants and polyphenols are in the actual apple. And blueberries, if they're like this, then you should look for, like, it's a phenomenal resource. I mean, it's very dense, but we've just manipulated fruit so much to be overly sweet that I think it's tough to say unequivocally, like, yeah, humans should eat or have orange juice or tons of whatever, because it's so challenging. Generally, I think that, like, eating locally, eating seasonally is just, like, a really easy filter to put on people so they can, like, oh, what can I buy from a farmer's market? And even if it is stuff that is genetically modified and they're getting these huge melons when they should be super small, or apples that are giant when they should be tiny crab apples, they're only getting them for 3 or 4 months max before they, you know, maybe go to more of a ketogenic diet and then get out of that. And, you know, even nuts is a big one where it's another question I get all the time. Like, well, nuts are high in polyunsaturated fatty acids. Yeah, they are. And there are a lot of reasons why this would make sense in nature. Nuts are also one of the only foods that contain carbohydrate and fat in high amounts. The only other food is dairy. Yeah. When do dairy and nuts occur? When things should either grow really fast or get really fat. And coincidentally, if you look at equatorial foods and nuts, they're very saturated, almost no linoleic acid. So macadamia nut, for example, the more northern or southern you get in the latitude, you get higher amounts of linoleic acid and polyunsaturated fatty acid, which makes sense for the plant. Because if it's colder, the plant needs to have certain metabolism. And so it needs these polyunsaturated fatty acids to move around in cold weather. Just like a fish in cold water is high in omega-3 because it needs to move its tissues and its muscles to swim. And so a really cool thing that nature's done with especially mammals in northern and southern latitudes, like, the more you go, winter's there. So these nuts drop off. The plants already have this. It's an advantage for the animals in cold seasons to eat nuts in full to get fat. And we know this mechanistically, that especially when you combine linoleic acid from seed oils, nuts, etc., and carbohydrate, it is the most fattening combination that you can have with foods. High linoleic acid, high carbohydrate.
I never knew that.
But it makes sense, again, for a squirrel, if it's October and they're chowing down at a bunch of stuff, to transiently slow down the metabolism, basically have like a transient diabetic response so that way it can store all this fat and then doesn't eat it again for eight plus months. Yet what we're doing is eating
it all year round.
Yeah, we have buckets and buckets of these nuts and seeds that we're just consuming ridiculous amount. Not even to talk about the seed oils. But this is where I think it's just like, again, there's an infinite amount of nuance. And if you look at things from like locally here, we have a lot of pecans in Texas. They only drop very small amount of the year. And if I had to go out and bust all the shells open to get this food myself, I'm probably going to expend as much energy as it's going to take to eat the nut.
Yeah.
They're a pain in the ass. And so this is the thing, that like, are you going to depend on an enormous industrial pecan farm, or now you're getting pounds of pecans for no work? Like, that's never happened in nature ever before. Even like squirrels and stuff need to peck through things and get through to eat the nuts.
Yeah, they have to work for their food. And also, I think what you said, you made a really great point that the difference between these seed oils versus eating the nuts in their whole real form is that we're eating them as nature intended us to eat them, with the carbohydrates and everything else in there. Whereas like if we're just, we're mechanically pressing these oils out of seeds that were not really meant to produce oils in the first place, we're messing with our food. And then as a result, of course, we're going to not be as healthy because we're not eating it in a way that nature intended us to eat it, in the vehicle that we were supposed to eat it.
Yeah. You think you're supposed to get fat out of a cottonseed?
No, I mean, well, and think about soybeans. Like you said, it takes X amount of soybeans to get, well, like a tablespoon of oil. And this is what I try to explain to people. It's the same thing with the canola oil, which is actually rapeseed, and that was a genetically modified seed, and we were never supposed to be consuming that oil in the first place. But it is such a process to get oil out of those seeds. If people knew the lengths that they had to go just to get oils out of those seeds, it would be horrifying.
Yeah. There's some videos online, like if you Google how it's made canola oil on YouTube.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
It's disgusting.
and I think that it's tricky for people because you start looking at labels, and even all these foods that you're talking about that are trying to be healthy, sunflower, canola, you know, all of these foods have seed oils in them.
Yeah.
But I think where it gets people the most are at restaurants, where it's in 99.9% of the things that you're eating at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's generally the worst form because it's the cheapest and they're heating it over and over and over and over again. And it's like out in plastic bottles all the time. Like it's the worst. And so sorry to break it to people who listen. Like there's maybe like 12 restaurants in the US that are very vocal about like, yeah, we don't use seed oils.
Well, and the problem is a lot of times they'll say that they're using olive oil, but they're cutting the olive oil with canola or sunflower or something cheaper. So you're not even usually getting pure olive oil.
Yeah. Do you know why that is?
Something with the Italian mafia, right?
No, I mean, I'm sure to some degree, but generally,
well,
kitchens are very functional. It's cheaper, yes, but primarily because I've actually talked to a lot of chefs about this, and we're a culture now obsessed with liquid fats, and we have restaurants that prep a lot. And same thing we were talking about before, like more saturated the fat is, it'll be harder at room temp or refrigerated. And so if a restaurant's prepping like a bunch of Caesar dressing or sauces or whatever, and it's pure olive oil actually harden. Has a significant amount of saturated fat in it, and they put it in the fridge, it gets hard and they can't use it. And so they can't prep ahead of time. And it's a pain in the ass for them to be able to prepare for the evening if they don't have a fat that stays liquid at refrigerated temperatures.
Makes sense. But just put the dressing out when you first get into work, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I get it. I get it. I have a little focus and productivity hack. Are you guys ready for it? It's really simple and it takes about 2 seconds to take back. Not only does it help with my focus and productivity, but it also helps with my stress, which is almost unheard of, especially if you are a caffeine drinker like myself and then end up in a jittery panic attack after drinking too much of it.
Okay. My hack is called Magic Mind. And all it is a little matcha shot that also has adaptogens and nootropics in it that are scientifically backed to help with cognitive function and focus. The matcha also gives you a little bit of caffeine. It has L-theanine in there, which helps to reduce stress and anxiety. The adaptogenic mushrooms help to turn on your brain so you're more focused and your neurons are firing. And there's other things in there like choline, which help oxygenate the brain. I refer to this little bottle as my natural Adderall, and I truly could not get through my day without it. They have given me a code to share with you guys for 20% off if you go to magicmind.co and use code REALFOODOLOGY, you're going to save 20%. I hope you guys love it.
There's something else that I really want to talk about, and it's kind of in this same vein because we're still actually, I have two questions. One, so the ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s, is that a concern with the seed oils? And then I also want to talk about how we are still feeding chickens and all of these, all of our livestock, basically corn, wheat, and soy, and we're messing with the fat profile in their fat. And so we're now consuming higher amounts of omega-6s. I want to talk about that too.
Yeah. So first question, omega-3 to 6 ratio. This is something that has been very, very popular, especially with the paleo community. The thing you'll generally hear is like, we used to be like a 3-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3, and now we're like 20-to-1. Mm-hmm. So all you need to do is increase your omega-3 or balance out the ratio. The ratio is effectively useless, and it's the total amount of fat that you have. Mm. Because you're all those toxic metabolites I told you about earlier, 4-HNE, 9-HO, 13-HO, aldehydes, et cetera. If you consume even a 1-to-1 ratio, but you have a ton of the fatty acids, your body has to do something with them. It's not like they cancel out and disappear. Your body has to process them, and processing linoleic acid in particular leads to all of these toxic metabolites. And for example, I mean, one of the biggest things, we don't need to get in a crazy tangent. You should get like Dave Feldman or Tucker Goodrich to talk about these topics, but we get doctors generally saying you should eat these polyunsaturated fatty acids because they will drive LDL down, LDL mm-hmm. cholesterol. So we are like obsessed with heart disease, yeah. atherosclerosis, LDL. And this is true. A lot of evidence shows this. But we don't go the next step and go, well, why is that? And what's happening to LDL? And it turns out when you eat these oils, especially high in the linoleic acid, you need linoleic acid to turn LDL cholesterol to oxidized LDL cholesterol. And so you're actually taking the LDL from basically being like a fat transporter in your body to oxidized LDL, which is actually the thing that causes atherosclerosis and heart disease, which again, linoleic acid is required to make oxidized LDL. The people who found the molecule said that.
Wow.
And so, yes, we're lowering LDL, but we're making the literal thing we need to create atherosclerosis and heart disease, which is insane. So that being said, again, you have that linoleic acid in your body, no matter what the ratio is. It's the absolute amount, not the ratio. The ratio is some bogus thing that was like an observational thing, but totally irrelevant. So just forget about the ratio and lower omega-6. Like eating a ton of omega-3 is not going to do anything to like... There's some evidence that shows that it lessens a little bit of the impact. And I think there's some mechanism for that. But omega-3 can also be very unstable and very hard to get. Fish is really expensive and getting really dirty.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm sure you being the coast, you know all about this. But like fish, clean fish, good wild-caught fish is very hard to find. Not saying people shouldn't eat it, but if people are going to like try to balance out their ratios by just eating a ton of fish, it's really challenging right now. And not tons of populations have actually eaten a massive amount. There's a lot of studies that are starting to come out that show high doses of fish oil are actually really bad for people. Mm-hmm. So that was the first answer. The second one would be, the different areas of our food system. So obviously when we go out to eat, we're getting blasted with these oils. And what happens is we eat them again. I said that like they accumulate in our body for up to 2 years. The same thing happens in monogastric animals. So we have a digestive system where we have one stomach and most of what we eat turns into what we are. The same thing happens with pigs and chickens, which we're eating way more of because people think that red meat is terrible for the environment and terrible for health, which is absolutely bananas. But
we should talk about that too.
Yeah, we could record another 3 hours for that one. And so even pasture raised chickens and pigs are being fed corn and soy. And what I've learned recently, as of last time we chatted about this, because we got chickens last week, we're getting pigs next week at my farm. Even the corn-free, soy-free feeds have sunflower oil, which is one of the worst, and vegetable oils in them. And so even the corn-free, soy-free ones are actually probably worse than the corn and soy ones. Because now instead of just eating the real food in its real form, kernels of it, now you're getting you're processing the oil and feeding the oil to the animals. And so I'm in the process right now of basically we're figuring out how to mill our own stuff. And I'm going to probably create like a line of feed for farmers who want to do this because I cannot find a corn-free, soy-free, seed oil-free feed, period. Even like the best organic ones, like there's nowhere to find this stuff right now, which is insane. And I asked some feed mills, oh yeah, like the animals need it. The animals need the energy source. Like, what are you talking? Animals have never eaten this stuff. Like when we look at, again, what humans should be consuming, what humans should be made of, 1-3% linoleic acid. There's a study from the Tokelauan tribe that's in Polynesia. They ate a lot of pigs and chickens. Their pigs and chickens, 1-3%. Our pigs and chickens, 25%+ for pigs, 35%+ of linoleic acid for chickens. Mm. This is 2 times worse than canola oil.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And again, I want to like emphasize, farmers are doing their best. They just have no idea. Like I'm the weird fringe person who's like crossed over from health obsession and this stuff to farming. Farmers are incentivized to make money. Like making money as a farmer is nearly impossible right now.
Well, and so and we're paying subsidies. Sorry, for corn, wheat, and soy, and so it's really cheap. And that's part of the problem.
I've seen a couple farms who are doing it very well. Who I actually don't think wheat's a big deal for, especially monogastrix.
But what about the glyphosate?
I mean,
if it's organic,
yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, caveat with if it's grown properly and not some crazy bastardized grain that is full of chemicals for sure, which is also hard to get, especially now.
Yeah.
And the couple farms that I've seen doing things well are using, they're having to use a decent amount of wheat. I mean, this is the issue here of like, there's a thing called carrying capacity on property. So if I were to raise, I don't know, 20 pigs even, which is a very small amount of pigs, only on forage, I would need like 500 acres.
Wow. That was going to be my next question. Like, why can't we just let them graze? But you need a lot.
You need to provide them food because they're generally like a wild boar, for example, is like the amount of land that they cover to get the nutrients that they need is crazy. And the same with chickens. And it's like, you're also looking at the end point of the animal very differently. So for example, chickens, the main chicken breed, 99% of what people eat, it's called a Cornish cross. We've developed this chicken over time to get fat specifically on corn and soy. And if you restrict corn and soy from the diet, they'll get sick and die.
Why is that? Because it has super like certain nutrients that they just need?
It now depends on basically the exact amino acid and fatty acid profile of corn and soy to get as big and fat as possible, as fast as possible. They're also, so you put like a chicken on a scale and let's say it's 6 pounds or something. The Cornish cross breed starts growing these weird connective tissue bundles because it's been engineered to not have high quality nutrition, obviously, but to get as big as possible, as fast as possible, eating as cheap as possible feed. And so what actually happens is like a chicken breast, for most of the chicken that people have eaten in a Cornish cross, is made up of all this like non-digestible fiber, basically. It's not actually like digestible protein.
That's crazy. And it's just because we've been messing with these chickens. Like they're just genetically
We've played altered. This game to try to get them weigh a lot because that's what we pay for. But it doesn't mean that like we've looked at what the actual thing we're weighing is made of.
I mean, this is just crazy. And this is an argument for people listening to look for heirloom chicken, which I'm seeing more of now. But you want to get those heirloom varieties of hens and chickens because we're messing with even our chickens now.
Yeah, I just think chickens are very... I put out a tweet the other day. It was something like my observation of what's needed to make things work on a farm. And so, for example, produce requires a significant amount of water and compost or fertilizer so the plants can grow. And there's some things you can do rotating around, yeah, but generally, like, you need a lot of water and you need a lot of fertile soil. It's an extractive process. Chickens and pigs, man, they need so much feed. And if you don't feed them, they're just, like, basically small, worthless little animals. Like, the energy input to raise the animals versus what you get out of nutrition is so awful and inefficient.
Hmm.
And also cost. It's like if you pay $40 for a 2-pound chicken that doesn't really have that many nutrients in it. It's like, I mean,
yeah,
I haven't seen any comparison though. And this is some of the stuff that I want to do at my farm is like, we're getting 3 batches of pigs, for example, on Wednesday, and we're going to run 1 organic corn and soy, 1 corn-free, soy-free, seed oil-free, and then 1 that has like, we're going to do supplemental protein and that we're going to feed them a bunch of leftovers from my friend's organic juice cafe. So she presses out all this stuff and then has all this leftover. So we're going to feed them that and then test their fatty acid, nutrients, all this stuff afterwards and looking at like how big the animals get, how long does it take? Because for a farmer, they need to pay the bills. And so they need the animals to get to weight as fast as possible, generally speaking, because people want the lowest price and the farmers need to pay their bills. And so there's this game, this economic game that as a farmer that they need to play by. And there are rules that demand these certain decisions to be made. But I think my hypothesis is that if I can figure out ways where if the chicken is 2 pounds but costs $50 but is 10 times more nutritious as a $20 chicken that's 4 pounds, will people pay more for that? I think so.
And you can eat less of it. This is what people don't understand is that the more nutrient dense your food is, you can eat less of it and be more satisfied.
Yeah, that's not a good sales pitch though. People want to eat.
I know, but if people want to get healthy, you know, and I'm here trying to spread the truth, but not everyone wants to hear it. Everyone's like, don't want to hear that.
I totally agree. And I think that we need to find ways where we can grow healthier food with less inputs. And I think that that's why I'm fascinated in this whole farming thing and why I moved out here a couple of weeks ago. So I can this is all I've been doing the last 3 weeks is...
Amazing.
Literally outside farming. And so I can figure out firsthand, like, what the hell is going on here? And why is this whole system broken? I'm just kind of a freak like that. Like, I need to like dive in and do all of the things to become the expert. But yeah, I've already found so many really sad things that I'm hopefully going to start sharing a lot more of this stuff and have carve out time because it's a very full-time hands-on job, which is great because I'm never on devices anymore.
That's amazing. Love it.
Yeah. But it's also like, if I want to share it and I'm like, have to be damn, you like sit down and like write content and like be very intentional about it. So I'm going to start doing that, emailing, things like that, but I'm learning an enormous amount, but hopefully we can start figuring out some ways and like getting other farmers interested in more nutrient dense food options if the consumers will pay more. And that's another thing I want to test is like, I think that the market shifts due to demand. And if farmers can make more money by selling a superior product that might take a little bit longer or cost a little bit more for them to produce, they'll start making the shift over and we'll be able to have a much healthier food base because of it.
I love this. I love so much what you're doing. And you talked about this recently on your Instagram and I had never heard this before. And so I'm assuming a lot of my listeners have not. What is the argument for quote unquote older meat? You've been talking about this a lot, yes. Where, you know, we're trying to fatten up these chickens in a very short amount of time. And we do the same thing with our livestock. But I was blown away. You posted a photo, just to give people context, of two different steaks. And one had this really bright yellow fat on. I've never seen anything like it before. Yeah. Can you explain what the deal is with that?
So it actually, it was just the photo that I had taken. It was, the first sentence is a joke. It's not two different steaks. One's a pork chop.
Oh,
I thought it was a hilarious joke, but regardless, steaks by side by side. I have a photo of it by actual steak. Like, this stuff looks completely different. One of the things I noticed, I was in Europe for a couple months last summer, and every like fancy hipster high end place from France, Sweden, Spain, Portugal was doing this like, so typical cattle, they're killed at like, grain fed is like 12 to 16 months, sometimes a little bit older. Grass fed's like 16 to 22 months. And this was like 8 year, 10 year, 12 year old. It's what breed it was, where it grew up, what, you know, the gender of it, all this type of stuff.
It's like Portlandia.
Yeah. I mean, it's made, but like, it tastes incredible. Yeah. And I had like a year old, it was a Brahma rooster, year old rooster. When we eat chickens, we slaughter chickens within 40 days of them being born. Mm. That's how long it takes for a chicken to get weight. So a one-year-old rooster.
That's an old rooster.
But it was the most delicious poultry I've ever eaten in my life. And I just think that when you have an appropriate palate for what tastes good, is generally your body's telling you what nutrients are in it. And when you have an animal raised in an appropriate way for a longer time, the same as you can bioaccumulate all of the negative stuff from eating a bunch of seed oils, the same thing happens with fat-soluble nutrients and all these other chemicals that we are starting to measure now. Phytochemicals, phytonutrients, metabolomics, all this type of stuff. So my hypothesis is that these animals that are living much longer lives are raised in a proper way, not eating GMO, pesticide, wheat, and all this stuff, are much healthier, much denser. The taste is there unequivocally. The cuts of meat look completely different. They don't even taste like the same food. There's this researcher also that I want to get on my podcast soon. You should get him on yours. Stefan Van Vliet. Mm. I don't think I can share a lot of his data that he's done yet, but this guy is sitting on mountains of data that I think can change the food industry. And a lot of it is about, he's taking basically a chemical fingerprint of what grass-fed, like monoculture grass-fed. So most grass-fed is actually the animals are basically in industrial feedlots, just eating one type of grass to like grain fed, grain finished, to more regenerative model. The animal should be moving around and having a very biodiverse forage. So they're not just eating one type of grass or eating hundreds of different plants. And he's saying that like these three different categories chemically look like completely different foods. Mm. He's like, he showed me graphs of like, here's how we determine this and measure this. And like, they are just completely different food signatures.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
That is wild. I mean, so what's the solution? So for everyone listening, you know, the last hour we've gone over all these like horrible things about our food industry. Let's end it on like a hopeful note.
Oh man, hopeful note is that farmers are amazing and there's so many people doing cool stuff in this space. Like the farming community that I'm starting to get plugged into is like the most hopeful, excited, happy, loving people that I've ever met in my life. And we have people like that trying to make your food better. Like, I think you're in good hands. I don't think you can trust anything that any institution says, unfortunately. And I don't mean to be that guy after like COVID and everything, but generally speaking, like, corporations want to make money and they don't care about your health. They're not incentivized to. Why would they? And so I think like the more you can just get involved in the food system by meeting with local farmers and buying your food from where you live, the better that's how this gets better for you. And there's an infinite rabbit hole that you can go explore here. And hopefully you don't get overwhelmed by all the stuff that I'm ranting about here. The biggest thing is, again, like if you eat locally and seasonally, you don't have to master it all. It's like, it's this, again, this infinite spectrum. an infinite journey. Like I'm learning stuff all the time and I've been obsessed with this stuff for 20 years. So I would say just connect with the food system. I think that there's a huge missing part where even people who care about health and nutrition, when they miss out on the death of the animal, butchering the animal and then cooking the animal and like sharing that as a meal, it's like there's something lost when that doesn't happen. Where people are like, you don't get the full cycle and appreciation for like local food and this whole thing that I think should be a movement, and hopefully it will be, that I want to start doing more of at our property as well. And I mean, Rome Ranch does this where they do the turkey harvest where people can come out, butcher the animal. But I want to take another step of like, okay, you butcher it, now let's cook it on site and show you how to cook all of these things. And so I think that like, whether it's cooking stuff, butchering, hunting or killing animals, going to visit farms, talking to your farmer, going to farmers markets, like the more you can be involved in the food system, the more people we have bought into that and aware of that, I think that's how things progress with people's health. And that's how things progress with the actual food system. It's like, get involved.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And then I would add one more thing on that, and this is something I talk about all the time, is support people that are producing food in the right way. And more specifically, look for regenerative farms. There's more and more of them popping up. And just like you, I left that Force of Nature Regenerative Farm Conference feeling so inspired and hopeful because we met so many amazing people doing really cool things in the food space. And I'm really excited because I think there's a lot more people waking up to how corrupt our food system is. And there's a lot of people wanting to change it. And it's going to take a lot of people to fix this problem that we're in. And I'm excited to see a lot of people doing really cool things. And I consider you one of those people that are doing really amazing things in this space.
Well, thank you. I think that with the Virginia thing, I would give a caveat of there's a lot of greenwashing in the space. And I think that regenerative doesn't have a defined thing. I think everybody's throwing it out there. The best thing to do with a farm is just go visit. And you as a human have enough intuition to like know it when you see it. It's kind of like porn. Like, you know it when you see it type of thing. Like, you like, okay, like this crossed the line here. And the same thing with, I think, healthy or unhealthy food or ecosystems. Like, your body just knows when the line is like, I want to eat from this property versus another one. Like, I've visited some farms here who claimed regenerative and it terrible practices. You go there and like, they do not rotate their animals and like the animals are living on a wasteland basically and just like very poor conditions. But they make it seem really nice from the outside and they use these fancy words. And so again, like get involved, go visit it. You know, if you have kids, go bring them out. I feel like I've never seen kids not love this stuff. But yeah, it can be challenging. I'm starting to put together a free resource and person helping out doing this, Kate, has a podcast about all this stuff. It's called Groundwork Collective. So we're building up a bunch of people. So everything's totally free. So we built out a farm finder. Spent a lot of my own money to get the development going on this. But we've collected, I think, 2,500 plus farms that people can search by address. And so if you want to go find farms near you, just go to groundworkcollective.com. You can search on there. There's been some bugs and some issues, but if you have any problems with it, just send me a message or email somewhere and happy to point you in the right direction.
Okay. Thank you so much for that resource. I want to ask you a question to ask everyone before we go. What are your health non-negotiables? No matter how busy your day is, these are things that you prioritize for your health, no matter what.
How long do I have?
As long as you want.
I mean, I think all the pillars that we're talking about before, all the things that go into health, like I probably have something in each one of those. If you were to actually think about it, the whole person, like for me lately, I mean, it's been nutrition forever, but I think that being off a screen and outside more than ever in my life is number one. And I've been deliberate about that and like creating that lifestyle over the last couple of months, especially. And I am so much happier and I have so much more energy just being outside all the time. And so I think like there's a couple choices that when you make them, everything else becomes very easy and you have to make less and less choices. So for example, one person might say, oh, sleep. I have this sleep routine and it's like 8 hours every night and blah, blah, blah. When I'm outside doing manual labor all day, there's no choice but sleeping 8 hours and like deep sleep. Like that decision is made for you. Also, like I crave normal foods. I don't crave anything weird when I have that lifestyle. Like it just is one of these decisions where once you make it and stick to it, it makes everything else so much easier. At least I have found that for myself. So that's probably the number one thing right now.
I love that. That's amazing. For everyone listening, where can they find you?
I would say just search for my name and it'll come up anywhere. The farm I'm working on, it's called Joyfield Farm. And so you could find that. Instagram is where we're posting stuff right now. And then I have a podcast called The Natural State and an email newsletter called The Feed that I put out somewhat regularly that I need to be better about. But yeah, that's where I am releasing some of the information now. So if you have any questions, feel free to hit me up on Instagram or Twitter. I'll answer whatever people ask.
Awesome. Thanks so much. This was such an informative episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Real Foodology Podcast. If you liked this episode, please leave a review in your podcast app to let me know. This is a Resonant Media production produced by Drake Peterson and edited by Chris McCone. The theme song is called Heaven by the amazing singer Georgie, spelled with a J. Love you guys so much. See you next week. The content of this show is for educational and informational purposes only. It is not a substitute for individual medical and mental health advice and doesn't constitute a provider-patient relationship. I am a nutritionist, but I am not your nutritionist. As always, talk to your doctor or your health team first.